This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. And thanks to Lexington's 95.3 for joining us. This is WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. And we're here thanks to businesses like Dixon Disposal, family owned and operated for 40 years. Dixon Disposal works to promote green awareness. Dixon offers all-in-one can recycling, so you won't have to spend time sorting or trying to figure out if those items are recyclable. These recyclable items won't end up in the landfill. For more information on the all-in-one can recycling, it's DixonDisposal.com or call them 978-2111. Today, a topic that just caught my attention in the last several months. I knew nothing about it until it became something to discuss and for me to research for a work-related project. Genetically modified foods. Or actually, I think what you'll find if you Google it is genetically modified organisms, GMOs. But we're going to be talking a lot about the food part of that today. Our guests, Wendy Vigder Hess. She's a registered dietitian, a blogger, and an author of a book, Sweetness Without Sugar. How are you today, Wendy?
I'm doing great, Rick.
Thank you for taking a beautiful, or certainly a nice Sunday to be here with us. Over on the other side of the ring, it's now I make that sound like it's a battle of pros and cons, and it's not. Professor Manuel Lairdow from UVA's professor. He's a professor in the Environmental Sciences Department. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Rick.
And I want to make it clear this isn't meant to be a pro and con discussion. For many people, including myself, this is a, I think I heard about that, but I'm not sure why that should be important to me, to my family. So a hefty chunk of the discussion today will be a little more learning. You're welcome to call in a little later in the program with your questions or, because you're already fully alert on the topic, with your comments. Again, our guests today, Wendy Vigder Hess and Professor Manuel Lairdow, as we talk about GMOs. Or genetically modified foods is how I'm going to continue to title it for much of the hour. I want to start, and Wendy, we'll jump on this with you as the registered dietitian part of this. Can you give us a definition of what genetically modified organisms, GMOs, modified foods are?
Sure. So genetically modified organisms really are taking genes from a particular plant or species that aren't normally found and inserting them into other species that create different organisms that aren't found in nature anywhere.
So, all right. I'm not sure that I followed that completely. So we're taking genetic material from one organism.
Right.
Is this from if we're talking about and corn certainly seems to be a big part of this this topic. We're taking a genetic information from something other than corn, or is it completely
right,
chemically built like in a lab?
Well, so it is more done in a lab. So we're taking from, for instance, with the example that you give for corn, we're taking something from a bacteria that's found that can be immune to herbicides or pesticides, and we're injecting that piece of the bacteria into corn so that it's allowing the corn to have the insecticide sprayed on it and not have the same effect on the corn. So you can, the idea is that perhaps there could be more yield of the corn and you can get larger crop amounts because not as much of it would die as a result of the genetically modified organism being put into the crop.
Professor Lairdow, is this other genetic material, it's not natural to the corn, and we're taking it from something else. Is it coming from a plant or another organism that is better suited to provide more yield to the crop, or is it something that, you know, the dramatic scientist made, you know, over in the lab and is adding to it?
Well, I think Wendy's description was a good one. And what we mean when we talk about genetically modified foods is we take genetic information, sections of DNA from one organism, often from a bacterium, and put that into the plant or animal, and thus cause the plant or animal to express some trait that otherwise it wouldn't. So one example that many people have heard of is taking a gene from a bacterium called Bacillus that expresses a chemical that is toxic to insects, put that into the plant then makes that chemical that is toxic to insects. And so the idea, the goal, is that then the plant makes its own insecticide so that insecticides don't have to be sprayed. This is often referred to as BT corn. It's used in corn and cotton a lot. I think the key point when talking about GMOs in relation to other kinds of modified crops, like hybrid corn, which you read about also, is that in GMOs, there's a direct effort by the agricultural scientist to take a particular gene, put it into a particular crop for a particular goal. It's a very targeted effort. The target's not always on target, but there's always an effort to be very precise with changing the genetic composition. I think one example that people, probably many people, are familiar with is insulin. We now have genetically modified bacteria to produce human insulin, and that is the source of most insulin that people inject today. So this is an example, not a food example, but a drug example, of using this genetic technology to create something that otherwise wouldn't be there in nature.
Is the outside genetic material, is it God natural, for lack of a better phrase? But is it something that we can go out today and just find, you know, in the natural world, and we're just, not just, but we're picking it from this place and moving it to this place? Not necessarily a God natural, motive, but is that what we're doing, or is it, you know, chemically based behavior?
Nearly all of the cases with genetically modified foods involve taking a gene from one organism that already exists in that organism and moving it into another. There are very few cases, none that I can think of, where people have constructed genes de novo and put them into food. There have been some efforts with that, but I don't know of any that have happened with food. I think the reason for concern, and I alluded to this when I said they weren't always on target, is that despite the best efforts, sometimes not only one gene is transferred. Sometimes other information can be transferred, and that is why we need to move very carefully when we develop genetically modified foods.
And they're also putting it into foods that don't inherently express that particular trait. So when you're taking it from the other and putting it in there, when you're asking if it's, you know, God-given or found in nature, it's sort of you're putting those things in that may be God created somewhere else, but not in the particular organism or particular food that they're injecting it into. It's not found there.
So just because we have two, and I don't know where this phrase popped out of my head, but just because we have two God-natural items, making a third one doesn't make that item God-natural in itself.
Correct.
We are talking about genetically modified foods, or often known as GMOs, with our guest today. Wendy Vigder Hess. She's a registered dietitian in our area. Professor Manuel Lerdau, a UVA professor of environmental sciences. GMOs seem to be the current conversation in our food area. Not that we have left behind gluten and its issues in the diet area, but what I've found in doing my homework for the show today is how many people, and whether you want to refer to them foodies or localvores, but this is the topic that I believe will soon be the conversation at the dining room table. And that's why I've brought it up today, is to learn more about it myself, provide listeners the opportunity to learn more about it so that you can have the conversation and determine how important it is to you, because apparently at this time our federal government or any parts of our government have not considered it to be important enough to make it obvious for conversation. There's no labeling of these items, correct? There have been little, correct, if any, regulations on this. Is that correct, Wendy?
That is correct. In 1992, there was a document signed through the FDA that they were saying that there weren't any noticeable effects as a result of having genetically modified food in our system. And so as a result of that 1992 statement, there has been no labeling required or mandated in the United States and for any of these foods. And this is still in practice today. And what is taken as truth is if the companies who are using them or the biotech companies, which is usually who this is surrounding, that if they are saying that their food is safe or that these genetically modified pieces of the food are safe, that that is going into practice.
Right. I think there's an important distinction. Wendy hit on something really important with what she said, which is that because of these decisions from the actually starting even earlier in the late 80s and into the early 90s, the labeling requirements are minimal to non-existent in the United States. Now, there are very strict regulations regarding the development and deployment of genetically modified crops, bacteria, animals, anything that is where this transgenic technology is used. In the initial stages of their development, putting them out into the field, those trials are subject to a lot of government regulation. But once it is approved as a food item, there are no requirements, as she said, for labeling.
What is the difference, or is there a difference, between how the government defines a GMO, a genetically modified organism, and to what science qualifies it at? Or is there one? Is the government ignoring or overlooking any definition from the scientific community, or are they all sort of on the same field here?
Well, I think Wendy and I were talking about this a little before the show, and I think I'll just repeat what she said, because she said it well, which is that to a large extent there is agreement among the science community and among the government regulation community about what these GMOs are. Where there is some disagreement is sort of how they should be treated, what should we be doing in terms of labeling and informing the public. I think there's general agreement that GMO foods are those that result from the deliberate movement by some agricultural scientist of a gene from one organism into another organism. And I think the big contrast that exists is between that kind of food, genetically modified, and things that people are more familiar with, say, heirloom tomatoes, which farmers have been selecting varieties of tomatoes for thousands of years by finding varieties that have characteristics they want, selecting those varieties, planting seeds from those, finding the best ones from those, doing that over and over. That selection process is what we think of as, quote, regular food. But the deliberate movement of genes is the creation of what we think of as GMO food.
But isn't that just a, Wendy, isn't that just a speedy version of using the heirloom tomatoes? Isn't this taking taking advantage of the science that we have now to select the characteristics we want from conventional foods, mix them with traits that we would like from other foods? Because that's what we're doing with heirloom tomatoes.
Right. Well, I think it depends on what items you're talking about. And when we're talking about the items that are found to be highest in genetically modified foods, which are the corn and the soy and alfalfa and even sugar beets now and some zucchini and squashes and some of these other foods, cotton, so anything that's canola oil or any of these foods that are based in those, so even things that are made from corn or made from soy, from this question, we're talking about a little bit different things. Some of the hybridization of the tomato is a little bit different than taking and actually changing the genes and putting it into these other foods. And with the idea and the way the government was talking initially was that it was going to create more yields, it was going to help feed the world, it was going to help make even possibly more nutritious foods of those particular items. And after 30 years of doing this, we're not really seeing these results. So I think it's a little bit talking about two different things with that.
But was the original goal to make wonderful, helpful products, and then it became money-related, or was it money-related first, and then to make the excuse for it became, but look what we can do with it?
Well, I think when we talk about plants as sort of plant-based, genetically modified foods, It came actually out of the pure science realm of trying to understand the genetic regulation of how plants work, some very basic science questions. And with a lot of advances in the late 80s, early 90s, agricultural scientists and biotech companies very quickly realized that this had great potential. And that it had the potential, if they could get plants that produce their own insecticide, they had the potential to have to spray fewer insecticides on fields, which would be an environmental benefit. If they could get nutrients into different crops that weren't there already, they had the potential to improve human nutrition. Now, I think Wendy makes a very good point that to a large extent, we haven't yet seen a lot of these benefits that people were claiming would come very quickly 20 years ago. We've seen some, not others. We've had some real problems as well. But I also think it's important to remember that this is one of the cutting edge fields of science right now. And there are papers every week showing new advances in our understanding and sometimes learning that things we thought were true 10 years ago simply aren't true. So there's a lot of self-correction that goes on in this process. And the challenge, as I see it, is to balance the scientific effort with that commercial effort.
I agree with that. And having that be where we're looking at the whole picture and, you know, there hasn't been studies done on for a long-term studies at all. So in order to see results, we need to have some history as well. But the studies that are being done on some of the animals and things like that, we are seeing how things that weren't quote-unquote supposed to happen or thought to happen, that other things are in fact happening. And so we're needing to learn about what that all means and what that looks like and how that can affect future generations and even our generation right now.
11:20 here on the Wake Up Call, talking with our guests today, Wendy Vigdor Hess and Professor Manuel Lerdau, about genetically modified foods. I got some questions coming up. If you want to include your question, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's 877 1-800-967-6762. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today, highs in the mid-70s. And then cloudy and windy tonight, 20% chance of showers after midnight, lows in the mid-50s. And then sunny but windy tomorrow with a 30% chance of rain, highs in the mid-70s, a little cooler in the valley. Right now, cloudy outside, 59 in the valley, 55 in Lynchburg, 60 in Richmond, 60 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated stainless convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And support also comes from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, presenting Both Sides of the Lens at the Jefferson Theater on Tuesday, October 16th. Acclaimed alpinist Corey Richards shares stories from his adventures, including his journey to become the first American to make a Himalayan winter ascent. For tickets, it's jeffersontheater.com. And Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville, and they have two locations in Richmond. All right, back to our guests. Professor Lerdow and Wendy Vigder Hess. Call us up with your question if you'd like, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, as we talk about genetically modified foods. And there goes the phone right there. We're talking about how, at least what I heard was, science and the interest in science to learn more about it eventually got plucked to take into money-making issues. Not the least bit unusual. But we're talking about some of the pros are that you can, at least what I heard was, become more pest resistant, so fewer pesticides needed, higher yield of the product, so we can have more per square footage. Well, give me some specific negatives to having a GMO. Wendy?
Well, there's a number of them. Part of it is related to the research that's coming out in terms of what we're seeing is that we don't know. But what we do know for sure is that people are having reactions in terms of higher sensitivities or food allergy reactions. And some of these things can't necessarily be attributed to GMOs, but some of these things are happening along with increased amounts of GMOs being put into the food. So we're seeing some parallels with that, specifically for the soy and the corn and some of the other ones that I mentioned as well. And we're seeing those in so many of our foods right now that that's something to take a look at in terms of reactions that people are having. Other things that are happening that may not be so positive are the higher amounts of pesticides and insecticides that we are getting. And there are different guides that are out now, and there's something from the Environmental Working Group which tells us about, they call it the Dirty Dozen or the Clean 15 of different pesticides and the higher amounts that are having that, and that's something that can be found as well. So There's other things that are happening in terms of the way our body is being affected by eating the genetically modified foods, in terms of having some of these have proteins that our bodies are not recognizing. So also becoming more antibiotic resistant. So if the genes are being affected by having to be resistant to antibiotics because they want to spray more insecticides, that may not be understood by our bodies when we're eating it. So these are just a few to name.
All right, let's see. We got a caller. And we have Michelle calling from Richmond. Well, hey there, Michelle.
Hey, how y'all doing? Thank you so much for the forum, Rick. I'm somewhat familiar with the lowered effectiveness of antibiotics, and I'm wondering which major human organs are affected by GM foods, and this is particular interest to me because I've recently understood that I have a mild impairment kidney function, and I'm looking now into BPA and estrogens and other things. you know, like that. So also I thought there was a law. I had heard about a law. I thought it was upcoming to mandate proper labeling of GM foods. And thank you for being there.
Thanks, Michelle.
Sure. Well, go ahead.
Okay. Well, a couple of things. I think there's, with the question of antibiotics and increased antibiotics, that is, I think, one of the most important human health issues with regards to how food is produced in the United States. To a large extent, it's separate from the question of GMO foods, especially in plants. We don't really have much interaction with that. When you talk about the negatives associated with GMOs, I think that we really sort of have to look at different categories of negatives. One has to do with human health issues, which are, of course, you know, the most important to look at. And there's one set of problems, and we have seen some very, very bad examples of this, of genetically modified foods essentially creating allergies, where we take nut genes, transfer them into corn, and suddenly that corn causes allergic reactions in people who have allergies to nuts.
Corn is such a big aspect, I mean, people often either overlook or just aren't top-level aware of everything that corn goes into all of these different foods on our shelves.
And this is, I think, one of the most important issues, and it's one now that the people who are developing GMO crops are more and more aware of. On the environmental health end, I'd say that there are two really big issues there. One is with this corn is the most common one, that produces its own insecticide. And the danger with that is that if the corn is not planted properly, you can develop, through very rapid evolution, insecticide resistance in the insects. And suddenly it's no longer any good, and in fact yields go down. One of my former students, who's now at Iowa State University, Aaron Gassman, recently showed that this happens and has already happened on farms in Iowa. So this is a really big problem. Then the other one, which Wendy alluded to, and I want to amplify on, because I think it's one of the major issues with GMO crops now, is when you have some of these crops are made, as she said, to be resistant to herbicide. And what that allows the farmers to do then is to spray a lot of herbicide on their field, because their crops won't be damaged by it, and only the weeds will. And this has two problems. One, it increases the amount of herbicides in our environment. And two, with certain crops, canola oil is a big one, it creates the potential for that genetic trait to be transferred to wild relatives. And this is something that has actually occurred in Europe already. And one of the reasons the Europeans are doing so much more to regulate GMOs than we are.
Explain that a little bit when you say transfer to wild relatives.
Well, one big difference between plants and animals is that plants are very good at mating with their near relatives of different species. So they hybridize very easily compared to animals. So if you are growing sunflower or rapeseed for oil, there are wild relatives who are maybe agricultural pests who are growing nearby you, in the, you know, next door, so to speak. And through hybridization, those genes can be transferred. Now, that's not a problem with corn. We don't have near relatives of corn. But for certain crops, it is an important issue.
11:30 here on the Wake Up Call. We're talking about genetically modified foods. That's Professor Martin Lerdau. He's with UVA and Department of Environmental Sciences. Michelle, thanks for the call very much. We also have Wendy Victor Hess here. She's a registered dietitian, a blogger, author of her book Sweetness Without Sugar. Wendy, Michelle asked about labeling. How is it that we don't have required labeling? We're required to do everything. How does this not fall into the category when you're talking about our food cycle?
Right. Well, it's a great question. And there's not really an answer of certainty of why we're not labeling it. But as more people are getting more informed about it, it's something that people are really asking for. And there's been letters to different legislators. There's been letters to the president. I encourage anyone who's interested in that, whether you know about genetically modified foods and how they affect you or not, but to just read more about it and become curious. And there are ways to send letters of wanting to have these things labeled to then make your own decision. And in California, that's happening right now, too, with something called Proposition 37. And if you know people in California, I encourage you to send them information to learn more about this proposition to get labeling for genetically modified foods. So even though we don't know exactly why it's not being labeled, mostly going back to what we've already discussed in terms of what was written in 1992 about the FDA saying that it didn't have an effect, that it wasn't necessarily proven. So it hasn't been mandated yet to label. And that can still be changed. And it's important to learn more about the companies that are doing the labeling for genetically modified foods on their products, and the ones that aren't, learning more about genetically modified foods before you choose to purchase those and see if you want to have more genetically modified food in the food that you're eating or if you want to know about it.
I think labeling is an area where there's really broad agreement across the scientific community that it is a good idea. And there's general principle of science that the more you know, the better off you are. And I think scientists would like to see labeling. And I think also from the perspective, sounds a little crass, I realize, but from the perspective of economics, the food market will function more efficiently if people have better information. The more information people have, the better informed they can be in making their decisions, the better their decisions will be, the better the market will run. I think that the major companies such as Monsanto, DuPont, Bayer Agricultural, who are fighting labeling, are making a huge mistake. I think it's in their interest to have labeling as well.
Dial us up with your question, 979-0919. I see that line's ringing now, 877-WNRN-ROCKS, as we talk about genetically modified foods. We've talked several times about doing your homework. You want to Google GMO because it's genetically modified organisms. And there's a whole program on non-GMO that I want to get to. We're talking about labeling, and it's almost like the goal now is, because we're not forced to label that it is a GMO, everyone who's interested is rushing to label what is not a GMO food. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, online. It's brgtshirts.com. Again, this is WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm Rick Moore, Professor Manuel Lairdow here, and Wendy Vigder-Hess talking about genetically modified foods. You know, I had this question with a friend yesterday, which is, okay, I can understand why the labeling is there or is asked to be there. But it seems like some groups, and Wendy, I don't know if you fall into this or not, who don't want GMOs at all. And yet we already have problems with our conventional foods, with disease becoming part of it, whether it's cantaloupes. I believe listeria was a problem a year ago or a couple years ago, and we have E. coli and salmonella. Why is the GMO battle so important?
Well, I think for a number of reasons. Some of preliminary research and research that's been done for the last number of years since we've been using the genetically modified foods are showing that there's been a lot of changes with the animals that they've been testing. And so at this point, we don't know for certain because there haven't been long-term human studies.
Are we talking about, when you say the animals that have been tested, is this the animals eating feed that have been tested rather than taking another DNA?
Yes, thank you. Okay. Yes, so animals that have been given genetically modified foods that have then been tested for a variety of things. We've seen traits changing. We've seen a variety of different illnesses, infertility, immune function disorders, endocrine disorders, different things that have happened with those animals that have eaten the genetically modified foods. So we don't know this for a fact that this is going to transfer to the human population when we're eating it. However, there's enough question that as Manuel has said in terms of, you know, across the board labeling, is just giving us more information. Like, why can't we make that choice for ourselves? And why can't we learn more about it and make an informed decision from this point in time of what we do know?
Caller, hang on a second. I've got a caller on hold because Kelly called in during all this and just left the question, which is, are the large companies avoiding the elephant in the room by not labeling products? I mean, what is their purpose for asking to not label?
Well, I think that there's these large companies, and I'll just use Monsanto because they're the largest, and a good example of the mistakes that I think they're making is I think that they are worried that by labeling they will be providing only partial information, and that in their view people will make partially informed decisions, which would be worse for them. I strongly disagree with that. I think that, in fact, most people are pretty smart, and there's a lot of effort to get information out there, and the more information people have, the better decisions they will make. I had a history teacher in high school who used to say that one of the first lessons in politics is never act like you have anything to hide, especially if you do. So we don't know, I think, is the core. We don't know why they're acting like that. It seems to me that it's a bad business decision on their part in the long run, but it's one they have made.
All right, let's take our call from Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. Question or comment for the...
Both, and I'd like to preface my comment by saying that I'm not supporting GMOs. But I do have some questions about the information that goes out around the world. First off, I'd like to say the professor may be not wrong, but his comments about the Roundup Ready corn, beans, and cotton, what they have done is modified the corn and beans so that they can be planted. They come up, and then they use Roundup. Spray the whole field, kills the weeds, the crop comes on. Now, prior to this, what they would do is tank mix two chemicals, spray the field with the pre-emergence, incorporate those two chemicals into the soil to prevent weeds. Your other alternative is cultivation, which I think would be impossible today. So, like I say, I'm not pushing GMOs, but it's a big problem in production agriculture. Then my question is, we are growers and we do three farmers markets a week, one here in the valley, and I have asked this same question to many of our customers, and that is, which would you rather have, GMO potatoes? Where the BT is inserted in and kills the potato bug, or potatoes that have been sprayed with very harsh chemicals, all skull and crossbones, all have to have an applicator's license, all have to be mixed with rubber gloves and ventilators. The residue, is so toxic, if you take your gloves off and lean against that machine, it will kill you. Now, which would you rather have? The BT that is inserted into that potato to kill that potato bug, or all this chemical. Even though that chemical is not directly sprayed on that potato, it's still on the vine and on the soil. That's my question.
Thanks, Jim. Who wants to start? Wendy?
Well, in looking at this a little bit more, I did see some research on having a situation similar to that in terms of choosing between the regular potato, the genetically modified potato, and the one with the spray on it. And I think that, Jim, what you highlight here, none of it sounds great. However, you know, if you're looking at the unknowns in terms of genetically modified and not necessarily seeing the benefits of better nutrition, having eaten, you know, what are the pluses of eating the ones with the genetically modified? Does it taste better? Is it more nutritious? What is the positive there? And with the unknowns of the positive there and the unknowns of the positive in terms of or of the negatives of what it may do in the future that are still unknown, you know, is there a way to remove the insecticide when you're choosing that one where, you know, or do we just make a choice to also choose certified organic that are using low spray, or we talk to local farmers like yourself to find out what you are doing and become more informed and making those choices, like it sounds like you've been asking the people that have been purchasing from you, which I commend you for. I think that's terrific. And I don't think there's an easy answer for this, and I think it's a personal decision that has to be made by each person, and that's why we're wanting to talk about this topic, because there's no one right or wrong answer. Ultimately, you have to choose what feels best for you based on the knowledge that you know and based on what more we're learning as we go forward with this topic.
Thanks, Jim. I it was great to hear from somebody who's involved elbow deep in this. I appreciate the call.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right, 11:42 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Market Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstand Thursday. Here's Rick on what you can find on this week's Hook.
And Albemarle County is known for its beautiful countryside, but it's also home to one of the most toxic places in America, the former Greenwood Chemical Plant. The EPA leaves this Superfund site after 27 years, but it may be too late for the nearby residents. And the roof of UVA's unfinished football center catches fire. Catch the news on The Hook. And with Virginia's Film Festival upcoming along with the presidential election, a film buff rates the top 10 best political movies. The Hook, here round for you. And let's thank L. Oppelman's, Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, and violins, as well as complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg, and at loppelman.com. If you want to call in and ask a question for our guest today, Wendy Vigder Hess or Professor Manuel Lerdau, genetically modified foods, call us up, 979-0919, 877-WNRN-ROCKS. And let's see, I think our most distant phone call before was Arizona. I think we've set a new Western highlight. David from San Francisco. Hey, David.
Hey, morning. Or is it afternoon for you?
No, it's still morning.
Yeah, you've still got a few minutes. Hey, you know, I was going to raise a couple of things. Out here in California, you know, we've got the Central Valley, and that provides as much as one-third of the agriculture for the nation during the wintertime, and the produce, I think, for the winter. And so we're about to do a referendum coming up in a couple of weeks. It'll be a Proposition 37, and it's regarding genetically engineered food labeling. And so if that passes, hypothetically, that'll, because most products are going to have, if they want to be sold in California, they've got to have it on the label. And so you'll probably, if it passes, you'll see the labeling nationwide just because it's cheaper to put the label, you know, the printing costs, in other words.
Right. Do it once.
Yeah, exactly. They won't want to special print things just for the other states. But the other thing I was going to raise, if I understand right, in when the Gulf oil spill happened a couple of years ago, BP was trying to claim that they had patent rights on what they were calling Corexit, the oil thinner, and they would not disclose what was in Corexit. They were claiming patent rights, and so they would never disclose to the U.S. government, to the Coast Guard, to any aspect of the U.S. government, whether state or local, the ingredients. And when you had that previous caller talking about, whether we wanted to get hit with a club or a rock with the pesticides, it's that same kind of bad choice. Many of these genetically modified ingredients are not going through Food and Drug Administration, or if they are, they're only doing it in a kind of an in-house sort of way, and they're promising that they're clean and safe and everything else. But because of budget cuts, federal budget cuts, there are virtually no inspections or review of these chemicals. They've fired so many of the inspectors with the Food and Drug Administration that there's virtually no oversight anymore from the federal government. And so whether it's the patent rights scam where they're just claiming that they have the right to top secrecy and that they can sell us whatever they want, ha ha ha, or the idea that they fired all of the inspectors, and so there's no review of these additives and pesticides. So, if your guests have any knowledge of that, I'd appreciate it.
And thanks so much for the call. Keep on listening.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, who wants to jump on that?
I'll take a stab at the beginning at least. I think the caller brought up a topic that is, to my mind, one of the really important issues of GMOs that we haven't touched on yet, and that has to do with property rights and ownership. And I think that this is one of the issues where both nationally and internationally there have been some real problems that need to be addressed. And those have to do with how GMO crops are developed and how those products are treated as pieces of property, who owns them. This is it's really a question of intellectual property and real property, who owns a seed, for example. And I think that this is one of the important issues currently that the legal system will probably have to address and the legislative system will have to address, because right now we have a system that is not a system at this point, and it's not sustainable currently, in terms of ownership. My understanding of patent law, and I'm no lawyer certainly, is that once something is patented, in fact the information about it is publicly accessible. That's one of the goals of the patent system, is that no one else can make money off of it, but you can see what it is. And I think that the patent process as applied to living things raises a whole new set of questions that people need to consider, and it's one that I don't think is being thought through very carefully yet.
Well, the two products that come to mind that we have spent a lot of time discussing, cotton and potatoes. So if the Monsanto cotton and potatoes with the GMO production, we may have more yield, they may overtake the market, and suddenly they're not 49 cents a pound. There are $4.49 a pound. Is that, it may be an exaggerated possibility, but is that a possibility? When you start talking about patent rights, and if Monsanto owns, if I remember correctly, it was something like 80% of the market for GMO foods.
That's correct.
And and it just makes me think when we start getting into the conversation about patents, because it's simple to carry it over to pharmaceuticals, and we all know that the original pharmaceutical, before it becomes a generic issue, is that they make a fortune off of these, and many people say, well, it's to get their money back that went into it originally. But is this something that we need to be concerned about? Is the current retail prices for some of our more basic foods getting much more expensive because of a patent?
I think that there are enough. There is still a large enough non-GMO food production system out there that chance is actually not very great of sort of a monopoly developing on corn and Monsanto raising the price of corn by a factor of 10. What I do think has happened and is a real problem for GMO foods is that a few companies, Monsanto I'll use again as an example, have been successful in arguing that they control not just a particular food product, like a line of corn, for example, but they control the process by which this GMO technology is used, so that any product that's made using that technology belongs to them. And this has really stifled a lot of very creative scientific work because that process is controlled. And there has been an effort to overcome this. A man named Richard Jefferson, who runs a nonprofit organization called Cambia, has developed an alternative method for genetically modifying food crops and that is not subject to Monsanto's control. But this is yet to really succeed in penetrating into the food market.
11:52 on the Wake Up Call, talking about genetically modified foods. Our guest, Professor Manuel Lerdau, and our guest, Wendy Vigder Hess. Wendy, you know, we've talked about labeling and everything going on in the United States, some pros, some cons, the risk reward. I love the phrase, whether or not we want to get hit with a stick or a rock. But much of this is strictly in the United States. The European Union has said, we don't want it and don't bring it over here.
Right, and they have clearly mandated labeling for genetically modified foods. And so there's 50 countries or so at this point in time who are having labeling, and you really don't see, there's not as much genetically modified foods on their shelves or in their restaurants, and the consumer demand of saying we don't want it or we want it labeled at least has really been the tipping point. And that is what this Proposition 37 is about in California that our caller alluded to as well, that, you know, we can see if that's going to create the tipping point here in terms of the genetically modified foods being minimized or omitted from our food system. But more importantly, just that our voice matters, you know, as consumers, that to have it labeled, that it's important what we want. And regardless of if people are going to choose to eat foods with genetically modified product in them or not. And so I think that that's been a big learning lesson from what's happening in Europe and other countries right now.
It's Wendy Vigder Hess, is a registered dietitian and an author of Sweetness Without Sugar. One of the benefits, if you choose to phrase it that way, for genetically modified foods is the greater yield. And one of the pros that have been brought up is the ability to provide foods to other countries who need help. And so here we go. We can make potatoes and corn, inexpensive products. We can get great amounts, and we can take it over to countries in need of it. Well, this is part of the risk versus reward conversation, is it not?
I believe so, but I think that it depends on what amount of food. You know, there's some examples that I came across in looking into this more even, is that how much is somebody going to need to eat of the rice that we're providing or of the potatoes that we're providing in order to get their nutritional needs met? And then do they have the capability within their own body to convert the necessary nutrients into what they actually need, if that's the only food, if it's a mono supply of a particular food? And might our money be spent certainly differently, and would it be more beneficial to provide the actual B vitamins or the actual nutrients that they're deficient in? And if we're putting the millions of dollars that we're putting in to doing this genetically modified feed, you know, and these are all questions that are up right now in terms of how could our money be spent differently to do it in a different way that might be even more beneficial, because we still have a lot of hungry people in our world, and this has been after the advent of the genetically modified foods being in our food supply for over 30 years at this point. So
yeah, we haven't solved, just by having the GMOs, we haven't solved the problem for starving nations.
No, unfortunately not. We
All
have
right.
not.
So. 11:56 on the wake-up call. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar, Amherst, Lynchburg. In just a few moments, you'll have Les Temps-Perdue. Tomorrow, Wintergrad will be here subbing, bringing you the best of 80s and 90s alternative music. Take a trip back to the times gone by with Les Temps-Perdue, only on WNRN. All right, just a few moments before Tamara comes in here to do her thing. What is the expectation for the labeling? Just because it passes in California, and I know that our caller David from San Francisco said that he didn't think that there would be two labels. But if the profit is enough, then there will be two labels.
Yeah, let me just jump in to agree with what and echo what Wendy said earlier about the labeling, that I think this is one of the most important current issues regarding GMOs, and this is an area where people need to make their voices heard, that labeling will may or may not affect the trajectory of how GMO foods are developed in the U.S., but it will certainly benefit consumers. And I'm not enough of an economist to know whether the caller was right, that there would be only one labeling system. My guess is that he probably is.
Well, and history has shown that in terms of with Pepsi a while back, there was a carcinogen found, and they were going to have to label for the carcinogens, and instead of labeling and going through that whole process of getting two labels and that kind of thing, they chose to just remove it. So, I mean, that's one example, and I don't have numerous examples in terms of that, but I think that history has shown to a certain extent that if rather than spending the money to do two labeling systems, that if mandated to label GMOs, that we would see most likely it going to just one labeling, and that can be more cost effective for the manufacturers.
Wendy, I know that as a blogger, this is an important topic for you. Can you give us a website about where people can go and do their homework now rather than just Googling GMO like I suggested?
Absolutely. There's a number of places that you can go. You can go to the non-GMOproject.org. You can go to fooddemocracy.org. You can go to responsibletechnology.org, which is Jeffrey Smith, his main website, and he's written a couple of books, and he also has a movie coming out as well. He has a lot of information, a lot of scientific studies, as well as other things. There's also a non-GMO food shopping .org, which is for those of you that have phones that you can download applications. You can get an app that way, and also the non-GMO shopping guide as well. I'm working on a current publication for the local community of non-GMO shopping guide that'll be for our area. So based on that shopping guide, where you can find some of those products in the local area, you can also go to write your legislators. You can talk to your CSAs. You can talk to the farmers like Jim that you're buying your produce from. Support your local community. Look for organic labeling. Certified organic labeling for all ingredients means that USDA has mandated that you cannot use genetically modified foods if it's all organic ingredients. If it just says with natural or with organic, they may still have them.
All right, the hour's up, although I still have a ton of questions. So will the two of you come back sometime in the future?
Absolutely.
I'd also just love to say
my book is also out, too, and I do have lists of different foods and things that are corn-free and soy-free and words to look for as well. So
Sweetness without sugar
as well, yes.
All right, our guest today, Wendy Bigder Hess and Professor Manuel Lerdau. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news. On newsstands Thursday, the wake-up call is also supported by the Market for Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@WNRN.